Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Tweet at Miriam O'Cal. Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.
Our text number 51551. You can email Miriam at rt.ie. I'm laughing. Brendan Grace is sitting in front of me with like four scribbles of notes. I need those when I'm on prime time, Brendan.
Should see me on stage.
Anyway, I'm joined in studio by Brendan Grace, our most well-known and best-loved comedian, and his career has spanned, of course, the last four decades of Irish life. A new RT documentary airs tomorrow night, 9.35 RT1. I've seen it, it's superb, but he hasn't done it on his own. By his side, throughout that time, since 1974, and by his side this morning in our studio, is his wife Eileen, and I'm delighted to say you're here as well. Yeah. Good morning to you both.
It's great to see you.
Great to see you both. Thanks so much. Listen, before we start...
Miriam, yes, can I just say, you look lovely here today. So different to the TV, to see you there in the negligent. It's so nice. Do you come in a taxi in that?
Yes, I do. Just for you, Brendan.
Oh my God, he's dreaming already.
But you got annoyed recently. Yeah. Because, tell me, because you had a mini stroke.
He had a mini stroke, yeah. And we never spoke about it before. Yeah. Brendan just couldn't deal with it. So over the last couple of years, I have been at the shows, watching people's reaction, hearing stuff. And I just thought, oh my God, people think he's drunk. Mm. And that would be the furthest from Brendan because he's such a professional person. I thought, oh, it has to be said.
Yeah, you because know, in other words, the mini stroke affected
His balance, his speech, even the way he looked. He looked a bit grey in the face for a couple of years. He's back to himself now. Mm. But his manager, Brian and Tom, they were hearing things too. So we were all kind of worried for him. Mm. So when this documentary came up...
He's writing now. He's writing.
Your name, I'm just writing now. It's not catching.
But when the documentary came up, I thought, yes, well, this is my opportunity to put it right. Because I'd hate for anybody to think that he was drunk.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he had an accident a couple of years later, and then that interfered with his stance, or his girth, as he likes to call it.
Yeah.
So he was really looking bad for a while, but he's thankfully he's back to himself.
Brendan, do you...
Would you marry me again?
Of course.
Thanks.
Yeah. Should actually, we'll go back and then we'll go forward about the illnesses. So where did you meet Eileen, Brendan?
Well, I was doing a gig in the Talbot Hotel in Wexford.
Okay.
In 19... What was the year?
72.
72.
We're two antiques, by the way.
No, you're looking good, antiques.
And I was on the stage down there. Charlie Sinner was the manager then. And he gave me a spot on the show. Top of the bill was Frank O'Donovan, Batty from the Reardons. I was backing him up, mostly singing. And I heard this laughter in the audience... And it was this...
Imagine your laugh getting you into that kind of trouble.
Yeah, her laugh was so beautiful that I came down to tell her to shut up.
No, you didn't.
Because I was singing at the time.
How old were you around then?
I think I was 20.
You had just turned 21.
Wasn't gone, yeah. 21.
Where did you grow up, Brendan? Tell me about your background and your family.
Well, my background, I grew up in the Liberties in Dublin. And I moved to James Street, to Eklund Street, which was right underneath Guinness's Brewery. And I grew up there. And it was from there that I actually... What started me off in the show business was that I had an accident off a motorbike when I was 16 or something, 17. And a cousin of mine who came to the house to visit me one day said there was these two guys starting a ballet group. And but I joined them and I said, well, because I was learning the guitar, which I never really played in the ballet group. But my granny and my aunt Wynne, my lovely aunt Wynne, she was a model at the time, Wynne Myler. And she bought me the guitar. I learned a couple of chords and I went on stage as a singer with the Ginger Men, and then we got a fourth member, Desi. He came in, so there was John, Paul, Desi and Brendan in the Ginger Men.
And you were very successful.
There was a guy called Patrick Crane at the time, took us over as a manager. And I always remember he suggested that we dress the part. And we went in because the Emmett Spiceland group were already out and they looked fabulous in their frilly shirts. So Patrick Crane took us into Louis Copeland. In Cable Street. Now, I'm not talking about the Louis there now. Right. I'm talking about his father, old Louis. Yeah. And I remember we went in to get fitted for these beautiful black suits for a battle group. And we were driving around on two Honda 90s. Suits and the guitars were on our back. And we went in and we started singing beautiful harmonies. And we won then a ballad competition called the Mitchelstown Cheers Ballad Contest. And we won a recording contract. And guess what, Miriam?
What?
We never did. We never recorded.
Why?
We don't have any recording. We just didn't get around to doing it.
You actually have and had, you'd a very good singing voice.
Had?
Does he still sing, by the way?
He does, yeah.
I'm not going to ask
he
you,
does
don't
sing,
I sing to Eileen every single night.
Yeah. So when did you make the transition from singer and guitar player to comedian? Like, were you always funny when you were in the Ginger Man?
Yeah, well, I was a bit of a clown. You see, Miriam, my birthday, and I keep saying this to people, is April 1st. So I was born on April Fool's Day. So my mother, God be with her, she said to herself, probably, I'm going to bring a clown into the world. So maybe that's why I was acting the goal.
When you were only five... Didn't you get up on stage and sing Gard
Morning R.I.T.
at 5 years of age?
When first I came to Dublin town to Gundowl Ballyclee. And I was in the choir, if you like. Well, I was only five or six.
Yeah.
So that was my first attempt. But I don't even remember that. How do you remember it?
Oh, I know.
You didn't know
me then.
My
family. Yeah. But when did you realise you could make an audience laugh?
I'll tell you, when John and Paul in the group would break a string, we couldn't afford to buy new strings in those days. So they used to have to tie a knot on the string, put it back in and put the clip in to hold it. And sometimes that would take 5, maybe 10 minutes. And I had to step forward and tell them jokes that I heard. I mean, you're too young, Miriam, to remember Dingo.
I actually don't remember Dingo.
No, Dingo was a great radio comedian. Because I'm a radio buff. I love radio.
Okay.
And I remember telling jokes that he would tell. And that's how I started telling jokes. And then I went solo. You know, we just broke up as a group. We were great friends. We still are. And I just went out on my own. And my very first show, I remember, was in Swords in County Dublin. It was a charity show. I still do a lot of them. And I remember it was Sean Dunphy, the late, great Sean
Beautiful
Dunphy.
Singer.
If I could choose. Sean Dunphy was due to be top of the bill that night. And he never showed. He was late showing up, the traffic or something. And I had to go on in the top of the bill spot.
Were you nervous?
As a solo I was, yeah. I had to change my clothes several times.
Does he still make you laugh, Eileen?
He does. And you know, I think that's the secret to a happy marriage. Mm-hmm. If your husband can make you laugh after all these years and be friends, I think that's the main thing. If you didn't like each other, like, then you're in trouble. So,
but
we've been lucky.
We're good friends, aren't we?
Yeah.
I can see that actually because I watched the documentary that's going out tomorrow night and that comes across so strongly in it.
Does it? I'm dying to see it.
It's superb. But how come you ended up going to live in America? Because don't you still live half the time maybe in Florida and half in Ireland?
Yeah. Well,
don't fix the boat.
The first couple of years, we said we'd go for 2 years. Yeah. We got our visa and we said, because Brendan used to work in the States an awful lot back then. So we said, we asked the kids, were they interested? And they all said, yes, of course. So we went to the embassy, we got our visa and off we went. And we've been going to Florida for years on holidays, so we always knew that that's where we would end up. So it was just amazing. We found the right place. We're still friendly with all the same people 25 years later that we met out there. A lot of Irish out there, believe it or not. But there's a lovely community. And so,
and as a result, I'm a shareholder in Aer Lingus.
Yeah.
You spent a lot of time.
Non-refundable, by the way.
Because the other thing, one of the reasons I suppose you went to the States and did very well was, tell us about how you ended up playing or doing a gig for Frank Sinatra. Wasn't that key to you almost going to America?
Oh, there's no question about
Tell us about that.
Well, Eileen and I, we knew that they were in town for the ultimate event. Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis and Liza Minnelli. And we kind of knew they'd be staying at the Berkeley Court Hotel. So we said, let's go in one afternoon. We said, we might just happen to see them walking around. So as we were going into the Berkeley Court Hotel, my good friend, Oliver Barry, the great impresario, was coming out. And Oliver said to me, the right man in the right place, he says, what are you doing tomorrow? Are you working tomorrow night? And I was working tomorrow night. But I said to Oliver, no, no, I'm fine. Because I thought he was going to invite me to see the show with Eileen. But no, he said to me, I need you to entertain the trio and their entourage.
The trio being?
Sammy Davis Jr., Liza Minnelli and Frank Sinatra. And I was speechless, which is very one of the few times in my life that I was ever speechless. And as it happened, you wouldn't tell me where the gig was on. And it turned out to be in the Horse Show House in Ballsbridge. No lights, no mics, nothing. Just wear a nice tuxedo. Mm. And I was drilled by Sinatra's miners to see what I was going to do. And there were women, by the way. There were two women who looked through me like as if I was in X-ray. And they told me, you can't do this and you can't do that. And I had just perfected, I think, the father of the bride routine, the drunk routine. Mm. And they said, you can't do that. And in those days, you could smoke and drink in, well, you could drink in pubs, but you could smoke. And Sinatra was there with all of his entourage. They were all smoking. And I just said, to hell with it, I'll try the father and bride. So what I did was I got a Guinness bottle and a glass and a cigarette, and I did the Father of the Bride, and I called him. I said, I looked at him at one stage and I said, this is you're not Perry Como.
That's funny.
And he fell around the place laughing because he loved Perry Como. I didn't know that. I could have been kneecapped for less.
And I'm in the wings watching all this through a curtain, like tiny little space. It was an out-of-body experience almost to be looking at Brendan standing right in front of these three legends. And we were terrified, and it was going down so well I couldn't believe the reaction. Like Sammy Davis was on the floor, literally.
Laughing.
Yeah.
He was a lovely man.
What was Sinatra like?
Lovely.
Nice.
Yeah, really nice.
But it was after that, wasn't it? Mm. One of them said to you, you should come to America.
Sammy Davis said to me first, he says, where have you been all my life? And, you know, I didn't know how to answer it. And Sinatra then asked his manager, who has since written a book, Elliot Wiseman wrote a book. And
you
he
get mentioned,
mention,
yeah.
Mentioned me in the book about Sinatra. And he said, we want you to come to America. And Premier Artists was the name of their company. And they looked after my dates.
Where did Danny Donovan, wasn't there a guy?
Danny O'Donovan's people were from Skibbereen.
That's right, there was an Irish connection.
And he ends up living very close to where we live in Florida.
He lives in Boca,
He lives in Boca, we live in Jupiter.
Yeah.
In Florida.
And was he part of their entourage?
Yes.
Yeah, and he was part of their management team. He was the one that got the ball rolling for Brendan to start doing the gigs.
Isn't life amazing though? If you hadn't walked into the hotel, the Barclay Court, on that day, bumped into Oliver Barry, you might never have come to Florida.
I think all the best things happen by accident.
Eileen got a lift to the train station to come to Wexford. Yeah. Terry and Claire
Cunningham
brought you out. If his car had broken down on the way, I wouldn't have met you.
I know.
What a life you and would have had without me, imagine.
We then discovered that our paths had crossed.
Yeah.
Several times when we were younger.
Tell me about that.
My very first, you know when you're a kid on the road, you have a boyfriend. So I'm like 14, 15, and my boyfriend, they used to call him Dahi Locker. I can't even think of his real name. Eamon Gibbs,
yeah.
He lived up the road from me, but he went to school with Brendan. So
he was sitting next to me in my
confirmation photograph, right beside him.
That's
weird. His first girlfriend, Brigine Robinson, went to school with me. So, like,
so there were loads of connections.
There were lots,
there was
connections.
Lots of connections.
Yeah.
Eileen actually met my dad, Seamus, before before she met me, because he had been a barman all his life and he used to work opposite the Theatre Royal. That's how, another way I used to meet a lot of the celebrities from theatre. And he then worked as an ambulance assistant. And they used to bring patients.
I was up in St. Luke's.
Eileen was up in St. Luke's
so
Hospital.
So I used to meet Seamus a lot.
She was a receptionist. So she met him before I met her, didn't she? Yeah.
The other thing that I found out from the doc I didn't know is that you, in a sense, made, I think Brendan O'Carroll would be happy to say, that you almost found Brendan O'Carroll, didn't you?
Brendan, in actual fact, was a commie waiter at our wedding of 17 people in Pat Quinn's club in Kilterne.
Okay.
And Brendan made me laugh as a waiter.
Yeah.
And he became, he wasn't even my roadie at the time. He was just my companion. And we used to laugh and joke, and he was so
funny. Just always funny.
Yeah. But what you mean is, this waiter was at your wedding, and Brendan O'Carroll, and you just liked him and said, come and work with
Loved
me.
Him.
And actually, we have a clip, haven't we? We'll play it now. It's Brendan from tomorrow night's documentary, and he's talking about you, Brendan. Let's listen now to Brendan O'Carroll.
Yeah.
It was my 18th birthday. We were on a break of a few days, and he called me and said to me, I need you to come over here. And I said, what's up? I need to talk. I was a bit pissed off. And arrived at the house, came in. So what's up? Well, he said, Eileen's away, and I just want to go for a bit of lunch, but I don't have lunch of my own. I said, you're kidding me. He brought me over here to have lunch. Are you serious? So we walk out to the front door, and I think at the time he had the Jag, he had two motorbikes, he had another car, there was the van. And now, which one will I take? Will I take that? Will I take that? Will I take that? I was going, for God's sake, come on, will you? And he points past us, he says, I'll take that one. It was a Fiat 127. I said, you don't own that one. And he said, I know I don't. You do. Happy birthday. I pulled up outside my house. My brother went, where did you steal that? I said, no, it's not like the other ones. Just, I own this one.
Oh, it's a really nice story, though. Mm.
Yeah, we were good buddies. I was offered a leading role in his movie, by the way. The movie that came up at the time. But I wouldn't take it because they wanted me to sleep with Mrs. Brown.
Yeah, and you couldn't
do
that.
And I wouldn't do that, no.
Yeah, no, you definitely couldn't do that. Yeah, there's also lovely stories like Jason Byrne is in it, and he's talking about you. And I think it's true. He said you're the only comedian he knows, apart from Billy Connolly, that when people think about you or anticipate you coming on the stage, they smile before you come on.
Yeah, but it's nice. It's a labour of love for me.
I see it when we're in the supermarket.
Go on.
And we're walking along. Next of all, he's gone missing. And he's surrounded by people remembering and the
tell
laughter.
Tell the truth, mostly women.
Mostly women, yeah. Older women.
They just can't get close enough to me.
But honestly, it's amazing to watch. Now, when we're here in January and the weather is so bad and the gigs are on, I often say, who in their right mind would come out to a show on a night like this? And they come. It's amazing. And we meet everybody the next morning for breakfast, and the laugh we have is unbelievable. And it's all the remembering of the days gone by. People come up to us and say, I met you 40 years ago. Do you remember?
But the funny thing is that, you know, back home in America, in Florida or in Boston, where our family live, it's the opposite. You go into a supermarket, although Boston is a lot of Irish.
There's a lot of Irish,
But I go into a supermarket, we go in Florida, and it's very simple. Nobody knows who we are. It's
great. Which is lovely as well. Yeah, we're going to take a break, but I'll bring you two comments over. Kevin says, I was working with 13 painters in the Braemar Rooms back in the 80s. Brendan was on stage rehearsing, and he said we were like the 12 apostles with a white bearded painter at the head of the table having lunch. And another, Elaine says,
oh, they were the fellas that worked in the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah, exactly. I have a tape of Brendan's years ago. My favourite bit was him singing Song for the Myra. I listened to that tape over and over as a teenager. Yeah. I loved it. Thank you.
Song for the Mire.
That's one of my favourites, yeah.
Yeah, Brendan Shine recorded that too.
Yeah, yeah, beautiful. There's a great documentary going out tomorrow night on RT1 at 9:35, All About Your Life. I want to bring you, there's lots of reaction, Brendan. This person says, when I was 14, my dad had a stroke, but not unlike Brendan, he fought his way back, but his speech was slurred and gait was slightly unsteady. Walking home one night with my mum from a neighbour's house, someone told him he was drunk and disorderly. Well, after his stroke, Dad couldn't laugh out loud, but I can still see his shoulders shaking at Brendan's antics on TV. Long life to you both, and thank you for all the fun.
Oh, that's very nice. And funny enough, you know, it's like I had similar problems, but it was through the accident I had a year after the stroke that I lost my gait. Mm. I couldn't do any stand-up comedy anymore. I mean, at the moment, I sit down doing comedy.
Okay, so tell me what. So when did you have your mini stroke? Can you
remember? 4 or 5 years ago, yeah, last July.
Mm. Were you with him? Do you know?
I wasn't. And myself and Amanda, my daughter, had just left 2 days previous to go to Spain.
Yeah.
And Brendan and Terry, our son-in-law, left us to the airport and he was fine. Didn't notice anything. So Brian, I got a phone call. I was only 2 days there. And it was Brian, Brendan's manager, called. He says, I hate to do this. Yeah. I know you've just arrived. But he says, I'm very worried about Brendan. He said, tonight on the show, he got several things mixed up. And Brendan would be very now spot on what he's doing. So he got the father of the bride mixed up with the priest. And Brian would have been the one who would have noticed most. People in the audience, Brian said, probably wouldn't have noticed, but he did. He says, you know, I'm just very concerned. He says, I think he's having a stroke. Well, I needn't tell you, when I heard that, I said to Brian, make sure he gets to the hospital immediately and I'll be home. So he did. Terry brought Brendan to Galway, the University Hospital in Galway that night, because he had to go back to Killaloe, get his bag, get himself sorted. And he ended up in the hospital when I got home. He had, you know, the way your mouth got disfigured. So he had that. But it already now, this was day three, it was starting to get better. Day four, he was back to himself. And then by the weekend, he was fine.
Well, I remember my doctor saying to me at the time, he said, you know, he says, you're in the lucky 10%. Yeah. Lucky 10%.
Yeah.
Because he said, really, only 10% of the people who have a stroke.
Yeah.
Come back to normal.
Yeah.
And it's all about the speed, I suppose. You went to the hospital.
That's what
very
it is.
Quick,
it's
very
going fast. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how terrifying was that, Brendan? Did you know something was happening to you?
I knew something was happening, yeah.
You got very disorientated.
I got disorientated, but not only that, I kept my calm.
Yeah.
It's like, for instance, you know when they give this Heimlich manoeuvre when somebody gets something caught in their throat? Well, if anything like that happens to me, I stay calm.
Yeah.
And I try to get it right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that probably.
And I have to say now that looking back on it, I'm thrilled that I'm still going strong.
Yeah, but it does change how you look at yourself and how you look at your life and what you need to do to make changes, you know.
Yeah.
You take better care of yourself. It's like you get another chance.
Yeah.
So you're far more aware of everything you're doing.
Yeah.
And what was the accident then? You've mentioned a few times, Brendan, that happened. Was that a year later?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened there?
I just fell down a hole. And my whole atmosphere went wrong because I was nervous of where I walked.
Mm-hmm. You know, his gait went off. He just lost his...
Walking on rough ground, for even still, you know, I'm very, very wary. And I use a walking cane. Not always.
Mm.
I try not to use it.
I prefer if you use it when you're out in a crowd because I'm always afraid of people coming towards and that might bump off them. Mm. So I think when people see a cane, they're, you know, they keep their distance. They don't come right into your space.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, you're safer.
Yeah, you respect it.
Yeah.
And did you say you sit down doing your app now a lot?
Yeah. And I've made virtual because... Yeah.
Dave Allen, Saturday.
I go to Michael O'Doherty, the great energy person. He's
he does bioenergy. You know Michael O'Doherty?
He's done lots of
tell me about him.
Things, yeah. Well, he brought
Michael
Flatley back. Michael Flatley had a mysterious illness and he brought him right back. And it was Michael Flatley who told me about him. And I went to visit him. And he, through his energy, the way he brings the energy through you, I found myself gaining strength. And I've sent lots of people to him since. And they, it's an energy thing. Bioenergy, isn't that what they call it?
So he just brings the energy back into you, is that it?
He finds the energy force within your body.
He doesn't touch you. No. He just stands, you can actually feel, I could feel my blood moving as if there was a bulldozer.
It's like your circulation gets moving.
Yeah.
But look, I'm looking at you here this morning, you look the same. I'm a bit like Jason Byrne, as I said earlier. I just look at you and you make me smile anyway. But you look, for my listeners, if they're worried about you, you look really
can't
healthy.
See you.
I know. But I'm just
sitting
saying.
There in your negligee. How do I look in the pyjamas?
Very attractive.
That's why they're tight.
Yeah.
But it's bold. It's Sunday.
When
morning.
You look back, I was looking back, obviously, in preparation of this, at some of the Late Lates with Gay, of course. I mean, they were huge moments, weren't they?
Well, it started on the Late Late Show.
I liked so much.
Yeah.
Like everybody, Ballygown, Bailey's, Brendan O'Carroll, myself, like millions of people.
I just watched the clip the other night of Boyzone when they were there dancing.
Yeah.
And that's how it was. I mean, my first television appearance was with Shay Healy in Ballacheet with the Gingerman. I went along to, we did a show and it's wiped. It's something that has been wiped since. And my very first broadcaster that I ever knew was Pat Kenny. I knew Pat Kenny before this place was built, well, it was being built. I was in Radio Éireann in Henry Street. And the messenger in Henry Street at the time was this tall, skinny fella called Pat Kenny. He was taking notes from one studio to the next. And it was there that I met Brendan Conwell, one of the great actors of all time. And it was Brendan Conwell who actually started, who gave me the nucleus of an idea as a drunk. Benny Conwell was the best drunk that I ever saw, and he was sober, and he was so funny.
So much love here. Look, I'm going to read a lot of it to you. Mary in Dublin 4 says, Miriam, I remember Brendan Grace when he lived in the Woodbine estate in Coolock. Sean O'Connell in Clontarf says, I went to a business gig upstairs in the Shelburne Hotel in the 90s. It was a beautiful summer's night and the windows were open. People started to stop and listen outside. Brendan sat straddling the windowsill and entertained everybody all night. He's only very so entertaining and he's a lovely person. Another Sean McGuinness says, I had many a great night with Brendan and Eileen. He's not only a genius, but an absolute gentleman. Long and happy life to them both.
Dublin
God bless
City
them.
Yeah. Love you, Sean.
Paula in Ashford says, Brendan is one of the kindest people I've ever met. He sent me a CD featuring my dad's favourite song, Dublin in the Rare Old Times, after my dad passed away. I've almost worn it out. It's played that often. Dennis says, I was at a Brendan Grace show in Bantry in 07 when he sang a song for Maureen O'Hara, who was at the show at the time. Yeah. I'll be reading these all day, so I'll give you one more. Thanks for the laughs, Brendan. I went to see you in the INEC years ago and he got me up onto the stage and my late husband and our two sons just laughed for days afterwards. You're very involved as well. Tell me about this single you've recorded, the Forget Me Nots, because this is important.
Yes.
All the funds, as Sinead Grennan explained to me, are going to the Alzheimer's Association. Tell me about this.
Yeah, Engaging Dementia, as you know, Miriam, is the name of the thing. And it's a song that I recorded that David Soule, the great actor and singer, gave me, called The Dutchman. And I recorded it 34 years ago. Imagine that. 34 years ago. And I was singing at a party in the Abbey Glen Hotel in Clifton. And that was the night I got married to
Sharon.
Oh, merciful.
That was another charity gig.
Yeah, that was.
That's your second
wife. Yeah. It was a special
night.
Poor
Sharon.
Yeah.
She
was my wife. And she wouldn't come on the honeymoon, though. But I remember Eleanor Shanley, Donal Lunny, and Sharon and the whole lot. And I sang The Dutchman a cappella. And when I was finished singing it,
Eleanor said to you.
Yeah, said, the words of that song.
She thought about it, she said.
Are very moving.
Yeah.
And I'd been singing the song for 34 years, and all of a sudden I realised it's a song literally about dementia.
Never dawned on
us
before.
It's about a loving wife called Margaret, who is
caring for her
husband, the same way as Nora Owen does about her beloved
husband,
bride.
Yeah,
so moving.
And that's how it all came around. And we took the original recording. I don't know how they did it, but I know that Brian and Donal Lunny were able to drop the recording of the Forget-Me-Nots on top of this, and it was perfect. And it came out as a beautiful song. with the Forget Me Nots Choir singing with me.
And you know, the best thing for people living with dementia is music. They just love music.
And actually mentioning Nora Owen, she has just texted in to say, Brendan, many thanks for singing with the Forget Me Nots Dementia Friendly Choir and recording with us. Which is great. Thanks for Nora for that. And also Siobhan of Farnham says, Mary, many years ago, I was due to sing in the Embankment in Blessington, but my accompanist did not turn up. And Brendan very kindly accompanied me in guitar, playing a beautiful Danny Boy. He was great and very kind. Thank you. I'm still singing Danny Boy. Oh, that's Siobhan of Farnham. We're actually going to go out listening to that beautiful song you've recorded with the Forget Me Nots. And all, I said, proceeds, as you know, going to the Alzheimer's Society. I think that's all we have time for today. Brendan, Grace, Eileen, I could have talked to you for another hour.
We will again.
We'll be back to your house. I think Marion Finucane would be a bit annoyed me if I talked the next day. She would. And
will
she's
I get to
very
see
nice.
Marion?
Yeah, you will. I'll introduce
wave
you now.
At her in the studio and make her laugh?
She'll be coming down the stairs and
I
say
Francis
hello.
Brennan. I think Francis Brennan is in with her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, he was up there now.
But listen, just to say,
carrying his flag.
Documentary and all those people you mentioned in this programme, they're all in this documentary tomorrow, which is about you, Brendan Grace, going out on RT1 at 9:35. Thanks so much for coming in today. Today, our BCO was Carolyn Dempsey on Soundguard, Duffy, producer Shannon Gorman. We're going out listening to Brendan Grace, which he recorded with the Forget Me Nots, all proceeds going to Alzheimer's. Míle buíochas.
Dutchman's not the kind of man to keep his thumb jammed in the dam that holds his dreams in. But that's a secret only Margaret knows. When Amsterdam is golden in the morning, Margaret brings him breakfast. She believes him. The tulips bloom beneath the snow. He's mad as he can be, but Margaret only sees that sometimes. She often sees her unborn children in his eyes.
Let us go to the banks of the ocean, where the walls rise above his higher sea.